On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, I'm here with Phil Hart of the Detroit Tigers organization. Phil, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris. I appreciate it. I'll be going into my sixth season with the Tigers. It'll be my ninth in baseball. I did 3 years with the Minnesota Twins, then hopped over to Detroit in 2019. Currently, just finished my second year in Toledo, AAA. But I've spent time at pretty much every level. Started in rookie ball. I was the GCL rehab guy my second year, but we had a strength coach leave, so I shot up to low A. I was in Cedar Rapids. Following year, I was in Chattanooga, double A. We had a new front office come in. Kind of knew I was on my way out, so I applied at the University of Minnesota. Did a sports science internship with Cal Dietz. And then hopped on with the Tigers, and I've been there ever since.
How was the experience with Cal? Did you get to do hockey and everything? I mean, obviously being with Cal, but like hockey was the only team, or did you have other teams too?
Yeah, so they kind of asked me what I wanted to do when I was coming there, and I said I just want to just work with Cal, men's and women's hockey. I wasn't there very long. We finished our season and I shot up there within a week, and they were already starting games, I believe. So I was there for about 2.5 months. But also during that time, I was finishing up grad school, and I went to Edith Cowan University in Australia. So I had a shootout there for 2 weeks, finished up my grad school requirements out there. But yeah, he's like a mad scientist, man. He's got a lot of ideas. I think that's how strength coaches should operate. You know, be the test dummy for yourself. See how you respond to different methods and stimulus, but a lot of good stuff. He had us like speed reading a lot of books for him and then taking notes, and then he'd speed read the notes. And, it was fun time out there. And I love hockey too. That's the other sport I really enjoy. So, and I mean, they have good hockey programs there. I think like the women's team at the time, like 60% of them were on like a national team. So there's some Olympians that came in, and it was a good experience.
Yeah, that's why I asked, because I'm a huge hockey guy as well. Growing up in the Buffalo area, I actually probably like hockey a lot more than baseball. I just don't know anybody really that trains hockey players. And obviously, I've been in baseball so long that I know a lot more people here. So I'm always like really excited when somebody brings up like a hockey name that they've worked with. And I'm like, all right, what are they doing there? Like, and it sounds, I mean, I've read a bunch of Cal stuff. I feel like every strength coach has, and I've always wondered if Cal, the person, and Cal, the program, like match up the stuff that comes out of there, or if that's like the filtered, watered down version of what like the mad scientist brain has going on over there.
I mean, for the little time I spent with him, like, he's just like what you expect, you know, like very smart dude. He had us doing a lot of experiments on ourselves. We do like the long duration ISO holds. And then we had a tensile myography unit where it measured like the contraction time and the relaxation time and like how long it took us to recover from the 5 minute ISOs. And we were doing some crazy stuff out there. This is the triphasic programs and, you know, the heavy hand supported split squats with 8 second eccentrics and all that jazz. It was a good experience. And it was interesting because like all I knew before that was my other internships, other places, and 3 seasons of pro ball. So it was kind of like a different world going just directly to hockey. And that was all I was concerned about at that time.
Do you still do some of that stuff in your own training, or did it like beat you up so much that you're like, I never want to do this stuff if I don't have to again?
I mean, it's pretty brutal. Actually, when I was out there, I had a little bit of a hip issue doing the split squat. So then I switched into my own program to just like a bilateral back squat, hand supported. But Yeah, I do. I do the hand supported split squats pretty heavy, and I just like how they make me feel. And it's just different than, you know, the typical power lifts. So, yeah, I like doing that. I mean, currently trying to implement more plyometrics in my own programs and stuff like that. Just experimenting.
I didn't have this on the notes I sent you, so sorry if I'm catching you off guard, but you mentioned grad school in Australia. Tell me about that. I'm really just genuinely like intrigued about that.
Yeah, so it was pretty wild. Like, I've always wanted to get a master's degree. Like, I just love learning. I'm not the best student, but I love learning. And I had a couple GA positions fall through before I got into pro ball. And I'm actually very thankful that the last one fell through, because then I got hired on with the Twins. It was all last minute. So I finished my first year with the Twins, and I'm like, man, I really want to go to grad school, but like, I'm basically in Fort Myers all year and just don't really have the time. So I reached out to Dr. Brian Mann. I had him at University of Missouri, and I was like, hey, you know any good like online programs I can do? And he threw out a few names, and Edith Cowan was one of the names. So thought about it, whatnot, went to the NSCA conference that year, and Edith Cowan had a booth, and they said, if you enroll in our program, you'll get an international scholarship. And all the requirements were is you had to pass your classes and take one class at a time, and you could maintain your scholarship. So I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to do. And I mean, I signed up for the program. I didn't even realize like I did realize I had to go to Australia, but I never would have thought I would be going to Australia for school. And that was the best time ever, man. Like, yeah, my first class was actually very tough. It was during spring training, and like, it was a research methods class. And I remember like 100 articles on my floor, and, you know, working a full day and trying to get your workouts in and everything, but survived. And then kind of learned as I went on, like what they wanted from me with my papers and stuff, and took one class at a time, didn't have to take out a loan or anything, paid it as I went. And I had some really good professors. I had Greg Hoff, who used to be the president of NSCA. I had Dan Baker, who's president of ASCA. I had Sophia Niffius, has all the change of direction research. Just a bunch of great minds. So when I went out there, like, I was actually out of a job at the time. I was in between the Twins and the Tigers. And, you know, I had classmates saying like, hey, we'll hook you up with a cricket job or Aussie rules football. And I'm, dang, I don't know anything about these sports, but that would be kind of cool. And like, really enjoying my time out here. Maybe I won't move back. So, but I had a couple offers while I was out there in Australia, and I was like, oh, I'd like to be back in baseball. So, and then I finished it during COVID 2020. That was my last year. And like, that was the only good takeaway from that year was I had time to work on my graduate stuff and finished up. So it was good.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're sharing this story, man. It sounds super cool. And like being able to go to Australia and meet all of those brilliant minds and everything. Like, it's I met somebody the other day who works in rugby in Australia, and I have no idea how the game works. I have no idea how their systems work. So just listening to him talk about it, I was like, actually, this is really cool. And like oddly similar to some of the stuff that we deal with, obviously, you know, of a different magnitude. But the world of strength and conditioning is global. And I think sometimes when we're here, we kind of forget that, right? We're like, oh, it's only, you know, American sports, but like you can go train any sport anywhere in the world and make a name for yourself. And I think having those like outreaches and like, you know, you said you reach out to Brian Mann, who's obviously a huge name in the field, and then he connects you here to some place and you're like, oh, okay. Like, I just randomly decided to do it. I got through it. Like you said, you survived. I think that's another lesson that's in there, is like, there are times in life where things are going to get tough and we really have to balance it. But like long-term, those times become like the things that really spring us forward, or like create new connections, or like, you know, something that we never even dreamed of, like becomes a reality for us because we're able to get through those tough times. So if I caught you off guard, I'm sorry, but I'm glad that you're sharing this story because it's really cool. And like I said, I was just genuinely interested myself. So.
Oh, it's great. It's great stuff. Like, I encourage everyone to study abroad or go visit somewhere that they've been thinking about, because I had a great experience out there. I went alone, and like, the travel out there was nuts. I flew out of Minneapolis, 4-hour flight, 3-hour layover in LA, 15-hour flight to Melbourne. land and my next flight was taking off. So I had an 8-hour layover in the airport, 4-hour flight to Perth. And then I had school the next day at 8 a.m. and it was 10 o'clock at night that when I landed. Oh, and a 50-minute Uber to Joondalup, where the university is. So, yeah,
all worth it, though. All worth it, though. So what is your best professional baseball story that you have thus far?
So I was thinking about this. I have a few, like, I don't know. Every year there's a new story, but like, I would say like maybe one of the best ones was like, there was a player I rehabbed in 2017 and he was really, really good. And so I go to Double A the next year, had no idea he was coming up. And he comes up, doesn't have a place to live. Well, one of my roommates is like, hey, you can live with us. So he lived with us for about a week. And then fast forward to the last 2 years, he's won back-to-back batting titles. So that's pretty wild. I never would have thought in my life, like I would have lived with a guy that has won a batting title, you know? So that was pretty crazy. 2022, this is more like a performance thing, but we walked off a team 3 nights in a row. That was pretty cool. And we won 87 games that year. So that's fun, you know, like when you're winning, it's a lot of fun. When you have one of those losing seasons, it's very depressing. So, but I think it's good to experience both, you know, see how you respond to, you know, losing a little bit and winning, you know, it kind of puts your ego to the side.
So yeah, my first year in the big leagues, 2021, we made it to the ALCS, and then the last 2 years we haven't made the playoffs. So I know the highs and the lows of the winning and the losing. And then the batting title thing is cool, man. And especially like you said, you were in Double A, right? With that guy at the time. Yes. I feel like Double A. So you would have been Erie at the time. Erie Seawolves. With the Twins. Okay. So I just feel like Double A is kind of the separator league for guys. And it's like some of those young prospects come up to you and then you kind of see them struggle a little and then they have to make some adjustments and then you're like, all right, this guy is going to be a big leaguer. And there are a few guys specifically that I've had along the way that are in the big leagues now and in Double A that was kind of, they took that next step in their career where you could kind of see them start to separate themselves and you're like, all right, this guy's going to be special. And then next thing you know, they're getting paid millions and millions and millions of dollars. And it's like, you know, I had you when you were just a child, like you were just a kid, you were still growing up, you were still learning the game, you were still making adjustments, and they still are at the big league level. But, you know, there's just something about Double A to me that always holds a special place of like, I watched you like grow up in front of my eyes. And now you're like a full grown man in the big leagues, like taking care of your business. So that level was really cool for me as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like you almost feel like a family member in a way. Like you see these guys when they first get drafted, they go to strength camps, like they don't know what they're doing, like they're all over the place. Or like even like a first rounder and like they rake, they come up to a certain level, then they struggle and it looks like their dog dies every day. Like they don't know how to handle not performing because all they've known is winning or performing well their whole life. So like seeing how they face that and then like once they get past that and then they're the real deal again. Like it's pretty cool to see, but it's like growing pains watching them. So that's cool. Or like, you know, a late round guy too, that makes it, you know, like a guy that signed for $1,000 and ends up finding his way to the big leagues. Maybe he's just a grinder or maybe there's some luck or a lot of variables, but it's cool to see. Like I wrote down like that's the happiest I am when I see guys get promoted. Cause like, you know, they're providing for their families and it's their dream and being able to help them along the way.
Yeah. When I was in Double A, we had one or two, we might've had two kids go straight from Double A to the big leagues. And just like that moment where you're like, you know, that guy is officially a big leaguer, like forever he can hold that, you know, to his name as I made it to the big leagues. And like you said, sometimes there's just first round guys with, you know, God-given talent that are going to make it. And sometimes it's guys that are grinders and, you know, some guys are huge and some guys are little and some guys are fast and some are strong. There's no one recipe, I don't think, that makes a big leaguer a big leaguer. And that's what's so fun about our game is there's so many shapes and sizes, mentalities, skill sets. And like, sometimes, like you said, it's luck. Sometimes it's hard work. Sometimes it's, you know, right place, right time, right organization. Sometimes a guy finds a new home and, you know, he makes the most of a change of scenery. It's just, you never know who is going to make it. And like I said, for me, Double A was kind of that separator league where like you could see some guys that, whether they were first rounders, whether they were the grinder types that got paid next to nothing, like the guys that figured it out at that level and moved up, like ended up becoming big leaguers because they were adjusting. Because we had a couple guys when I was there that, you know, had some big league time. They were a little older and they were kind of there to guide some of the young kids. And they were kind of at the end, the tail end of their careers, like hopefully trying to get to the big leagues one more time, but realistically probably not. And then you had kids that were 19, 20 years old that were as green as they come and excited. And, you know, they're facing guys with fastballs and breaking balls. And at a lot of those lower levels, it's like guys just throw hard. And if you can hit the velo, great. But then you get to Double A and guys start making adjustments to you and you have to adjust back. And that's when the game becomes like the game and you start seeing those guys grow up. And, you know, so for me, I agree with you 100%. It's all about the players and about seeing them grow up and move up and fulfill their dreams and anything that we can do to help them. And even if we play a really, really small part in that, it's just so rewarding to see those guys and then see the team celebrating like this guy's going to AAA, this guy's going to the big leagues, and everybody's losing their mind. I'm sure too, in, you know, being in AAA the last couple of years, like when guys get the call for the first time, I'm sure it feels great every time, right?
Oh man, it's a big deal over here. We make it a big deal. It's pretty cool. It's cool to see a team too, like kind of rally around their guys, and they're all excited. Like I was expecting there to be some guys that were maybe a little jealous or whatnot, but doesn't seem to be the case. Everyone's pretty. That's quite the accomplishment. So it's cool to see.
And then on your other one there, you talk about, you know, walking teams off. I have my own walk-off story, except we got walked off two nights in a row on walk-off walks.
Oh, no.
We were in Harrisburg when I was in Double A, and two nights in a row, it was like bottom of the ninth, tie game, walk, 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 we lose. Next night, we're like, I never seen that before. Next night, walk, 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 lose. And we're like, two nights in a row, like, just nothing. We just gave the game to them in the ninth. So I don't know why. You just always remember like random things like that from the minor leagues, man. And like you said, every year there's a new story or two that pops up. And, you know, I'll talk to somebody and be like, hey, do you remember in 2017 when this happened? I'm like, oh, I didn't remember, but now I do, like clear as day. I'm like, do you remember when this happened? Like, I don't know. It's just there's that bonding aspect in the minor leagues coming up that, you know, like you said, guys become like family and you spend so much time together. And, you know, sometimes those wins feel really good. Sometimes those losses feel really bad. And then, you know, you look back on them and you kind of just smile either way, because it's just, you know, it's a memory as being together, whether it was really good or really bad. Like, you know, you were all together in it together and all kind of had that same feeling. And, you know, you get on the bus afterwards and you're like either hyped up or you're like pissed off. And then, you know, you got 15-hour drive back home and you're like, oh my, you know, everybody's got those stories, man. So it's why I asked the question. It's just fun to share pro ball stories with other people.
I had a player tell me a few years ago, he says, I'm not going to remember any of the games, how I played in them, whatnot, but I'm going to remember is the bus rides, you know, having a good time with my buddies and like cranking some country music. And I started thinking about it. I was like, yeah, it's like a family. And it, you know, not a lot of people work the hours we work and the schedules, and you got to enjoy a lot of the stuff off the field too. So
100%.
Yeah.
100%. What do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
Okay. I took some notes on this.
Good. I'm excited, especially since you spent time with Cal. I can't wait.
My first one is the aerobic system. I believe that you need to develop aerobic base. I feel like we've gotten away from that. And there's all these people coming out saying, oh, you need to do just sprint training or just this method. And it's like, well, no, like aerobic having a better aerobic base, work capacity, you're going to recover from those bus rides and, you know, sleep schedules, and they all work together. It's not like just one system works. So I think there's a contribution to the aerobic system. Now, I don't think necessarily you have to put a lot of emphasis on it in season, but, you know, maybe that first month of the off season, that's where you do your aerobic work, your GPP, the higher rep stuff that you don't get during season. So that'd be the first thing. I've just heard a lot of people talk about it, and like it rubs me the wrong way when they say, yeah, you just need to sprint train. Like, no, you need to do everything. Like, it's all one piece. It's a piece of the puzzle, and it's how you structure that puzzle. I believe you got to have a level system. That's something we were working on when I was with Minnesota, but there's no reason like everyone does the same program. A 17-year-old Latin player compared to a potential Hall of Famer, they have different needs. Maybe it's not best to load the 17-year-old with a barbell on his back right away. Maybe take him through like an ISO phase, body weight, make sure he can hold the positions. He's got the mobility and the requirements, and then progress him to like kettlebells. And it's long-term development at that point with a guy like that. Where a Hall of Famer, maybe it's one particular thing he needs to work on. Maybe it's even just body composition, as basic as that is. Maybe he's got all the other tools. I'm not a big social media guy. I feel like there's a lot of people in the field now that they're trying to promote themselves. They kind of have an ego. They want every picture they can get of themselves doing something on the field, or move their hands around while they're coaching and over coaching. I'm not about that. I think players find that cheesy, and they can pick up on that pretty quick if you're real or not with them. And maybe not everyone needs a specific method. So like, maybe not every player in your organization needs to do a hand supported safety bar split squat with the tendo unit in accommodating resistance. Like, okay, you got an advanced guy that has a high training age. Maybe that is a method you use with him. But, you know, if a guy's got a short window where he's going to be in the big league soon, but there's little things you can work on, like maybe it's just like some water bag stuff. Maybe you need single leg stability. I feel like that's important. But I feel like a lot of coaches nowadays, that they see something on Instagram and they're like, I need to incorporate all this with my group of players, and it's not the right time. Or, and you even have players that ask about that stuff too. They think they need to be doing it. It's like, well, no, I can see some other areas you need to work on. So, that's, individualization for me. Like, know your players, know what they need, and hold them to that.
There's so much here that I want to discuss. And I hope you have time, because
I do.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so first, this one is the easiest one for me. The aerobic system and like people only saying sprinting, you need to get away. I could not agree more. Like, I am on this big kick right now of like general fitness, like just doesn't exist, especially in younger kids. I feel like there's too many people trying to make a name for themselves by training young kids like pro athletes. And then they come to us and then they're like either really out of shape or like they don't last, they break down. Like, we have to like fix a lot of things. And then we get like the bad name because we're like making them do aerobic work. And it's like, well, you know, this guy doesn't have anything to his name. Like, he needs this. Like, and again, like you said, I think there's a time and a place for everything and developing everything, and being smart with your programming and everything like that comes into play. That's probably another thing that is missing with a lot of younger coaches nowadays. I just don't think younger coaches know how to program well. I think when I was coming up in grad school and I went in my internship, like a major part of that time of my life and development was like learning how to program, learning what kind of adaptations to look for and how to get them. And then, like you said, like individualizing for guys based on what my coaching eyes see, and like talking with the players and things like that, being able to individualize within my toolbox, and like having a big toolbox, but understanding that like I need to be able to do these different things. And like you said, not everybody needs this specific method. Like, I think too many people, and I was probably guilty of this too early on, right? Is like you fall in love with what your mentor taught you, and then you almost like turn off to anything else. And if you're not open-minded to something new or different, like everything becomes West Side, or everything becomes triphasic, or everything becomes tier system, where like all of those things work, but a guy, you know, one guy versus the other guy, this is to your other point, like the level system, they don't all need the same thing. Like if a guy is in AAA, he came from another organization, we're trying to get, you know, a little bit of, squeeze a little bit of extra out of him, there's something that might help him to jump to the big leagues and help the big league team, that program is going to look different than the kid who just came over from the DR, who, you know, needs to put on muscle mass, he needs to put on size, he needs to put on strength, whatever. And like you said, long term, it just looks different. So I agree with everything you're saying here. I want to get back to the level system first, and then maybe talk about the social media thing after. So in terms of like talking about a level system, maybe in your own mind, like, how do you progress guys through that? Are there checkpoints they have to hit to get to the next spot? Is it like a, you know, one program for group A, group B, group C? Is it like a couple of exercises from A, a couple from B, a couple from C, based on, you know, what we see, what they test out? Like, in your mind, how does that look in a level system, especially in like, let's say, professional baseball with guys moving all over the place?
Yeah, so that was a project we were working on, and it never got finished. But I've had these ideas in my head for a while, and I actually stole them from when I was working at University of Missouri with football, because they had a level system there. Mm-hmm. And basically it was like the newcomers, like freshmen and transfer guys, they're put on this really basic program separated from the rest of the group. And it was a lot of isometrics and tempo work, dumbbells, kettlebells, stuff like that. And they might only be in that for two weeks to a month. And then they made a big deal about the, like, congrats, you've progressed to level one, and congrats, you progressed to level two. Where like a lot of guys were in the level two, where it was more like general barbell work, a little bit higher volume, just getting stronger was pretty much the main goal. Then like our level three guys, that would be the guys that started like experimenting with accommodating resistance and VBT. And then basically like the level four guys were like guys that were training for, you know, the draft. So I feel like as you go up, there's less things you need to focus on. It's more dialed into one thing, one area. And I think that's the same thing with our guys. Like, you know, you got a guy that's his late 30s, like maybe all he really needs is mobility work. I mean, you watch him on the field, he's capable of hitting the ball out of the park, you know, but maybe he's got a mobility restriction, or maybe he's at risk of having something come up because of a restriction or some type of dysfunction in his tissue. But like the younger guys, it's, I think work capacity is number one, isometrics, and then general strength, getting guys stronger. And also not just in like bilateral patterns. Like, it's funny, you've seen some of these guys come out of college and they're like, yeah, trap bar deadlift 600 pounds. But then you put them on one leg and they can barely do a walking lunge with 45s. So I heard Eric Cressy speak about this back in like, it was like 2017, but he was talking about weighted balls. And he's like, I don't think everyone should do weighted balls. And he starts talking about it, he's like, well, if a guy can't do a proper lunge pattern, like, why would I load him with a ball and have him throw it? You know, so, you know, that's like, that's the part everyone wants to get to right away. And it's like, maybe that's something down the road, but you got to establish a base before you get there. Starting to look into more like Bondarchuk's work, you know, with the special exercise and stuff like that. Like, maybe a guy just starting off, he doesn't need any of that, but he's got a few years of training under his belt, then maybe he can start sprinkling that stuff in.
Yeah, it's It's something that I've thought about for a long time. It's something I've talked about with other people in professional baseball, you know, in my circle of like, God, the thing is, at any given level, you're going to have some young kids, you're going to have some older guys, even within the context of, you know, let's say low A, like you might have some 18, 19 year old kids. And then the guys that are older there, you know, are 22, 23. They've been in A ball a couple of times. They're repeating. You know, like we said earlier in double A, you might have a kid who's 20 years old, who's a high level prospect, high priority. When I was in AAA, I had a guy who was in like his, you know, early mid 30s, like just trying to make a comeback into the big leagues. And then some of our high priority prospect kids. And it's like how, you know, trying to figure out how to have a program for development for those younger kids versus some of those older guys. And then the other thing in the game right now, it just feels like sometimes guys get rushed through the minor leagues and sometimes they miss like key components of the development. And I think it really robs them of the opportunity to just like establish some things for themselves long-term in their career. And it seems like the long, long careers of the Pedroia types, the Derek Jeter types, you know, like it just doesn't seem to be as common nowadays. It seems like we want this guy to be, you know, player X in 2 years, like get him there as fast as you can. And then he gets to the big leagues and, you know, he performs, but he breaks down or he doesn't last long term, or like there's another guy that's going to take his place. And it kind of just revolves a little bit faster. And I don't know. It's just, it's an interesting like predicament that we're in as strength and conditioning professionals in the field right now, because we understand the value of like developing guys over the long term. We understand the value of like developing those bases of strength and you know, the aerobic capacity and the general work capacity, things like that. But at the same time, some of these guys are getting flown through the system because they're really good players and they're missing out on some of these other aspects at the expense of like, you know, let's just get this guy up. So I don't know if you've seen that as well, but that's kind of been my own personal take on it. And so it's like, I don't necessarily know the answer to like, how do we create this level system for guys and how do they graduate through it? And like, what are checkpoints? So I was just curious what your thoughts on it were.
Yeah. And I mean, too, like you've probably seen it too, but you have say two players in the off season, you send them the program that you want them doing. One does it. The other guy doesn't do it. They show up to spring training. The one guy's ready to go. The other guy, it's like, you have to spend that month of spring training, get them in shape. And it's like a little nuances like that too. Or like a guy that wants to play winter ball. So like he's basically in season for a full year and maybe he didn't have access to equipment. So it's like he's just doing body weight stuff, or where it would be nice to have a little bit more eyes on guys throughout the whole year. And it's going to be interesting with this dead period now too, where, you know, we're not allowed to reach out to people. And but yeah, it's just nature of the game, doing what you can with them when you have them.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude part one of this two-part episode with Phil. We'll get into him being strength coach of the year in part two, but I think this is probably a good place to end part one. This was a really good conversation with him, especially with regards to the aerobic system and the level system there towards the end of the episode. Three things that I took from Phil in this part of the episode: be open to learning new methods through both schooling and hands-on application. Not every player needs a specific method of training, and players will see through a lack of authenticity and humility. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.